Thanks, Mike. Thanks, team. Since we're on a webcast and we're recording this, if you could raise your hand for Q&A, and we'll bring a microphone over to you. Why don't we start off with Steve Value Imagination Winokur.
Ouch. all right, let me just maybe a, three things. One, risk, second, pricing, third, portfolio. On the risk side, just want to get a sense on the counterparty risk on page 36 of Ryan's presentation. I know we talked about that broadly. Could you give us a little more color around what counterparty exposure you have and the exposure of those counterparties to sovereign debt?
Kathy or Ryan, which one?
Well, I can start. I think our counterparty exposure comes from really two sources. So one is our cash portfolio and how we invest it. We have some money in the bank as well as some operating cash that we need around the world. And then we also have execute some derivatives because we want to match fund our portfolio. So that in and of itself creates counterparty risk. But they're simple derivatives, they're interest rates and FX, and we manage them very tightly. So we do daily marks on our derivatives portfolio. We have what we call collateralized agreements so that they post collateral to the extent that there is a change in value in the derivatives. And then in terms of the cash and how we invest it, we make sure that we operate with the strongest and safest institutions that are out there, and we keep all of our excess cash and very short-dated instruments so that they're readily available, for the most part, within 7 days.
The thing I'd add is much of the cash portfolio is invested in reverse repos, and so you have to think of that as double default risk, where we not only have the counterparty as a first line of defense, but we also have high-grade sovereigns, UK, France, et cetera, pledged as collateral.
Okay, and the other two are just on pricing. So we're seeing this great uptick in pricing. How long, as you're only showing 1 year out and a slight uptick, so if I sort of think of a five-year roll through, how long should we expect and how big could that be in pricing and sustainability of that, given the competitive environment? And then the second part, just to get to, is the portfolio. So you've talked about the portfolio a lot in the consumer side of the business and the red assets, but if you go beyond the red assets, how are you thinking about the portfolio going forward?
Okay. I'll take a shot, and then maybe, Bill, you might want to chime in as well. But the I think trying to project pricing out 5 years is unknowable in that regard. If you'll recall, we didn't expect this good a year this year last December. Pricing was good the first half of the year, and then it started to come under some more pressure, coming down a bit late second quarter. Europe sort of took care of that, and pricing is, again, is the numbers that that you see. I would say that we've been pretty disciplined around pricing. We really love how the math works on that. So we, you know, one of the nice things about having a model where you have your own people, direct origination, is we can change prices with an email. So we can do it very quickly. We actually do control that. We have a throttle and a brake on it. We'll be competitive, and we're not uncompetitive today. It's just the markets are a bit better. We're planning for next year about how we're thinking about this year. We'll see what the market allows in that regard. I couldn't, you know, hopefully in 5 years the world's better, in which case pricing should be more competitive. But Jeff, you went off.
The average duration of, for instance, Dan's book, when he shows you the portfolio, is about 2.5 to 3 years. That obviously can change depending on what rates do and refinancing rates go. But generally speaking, 2.5 to 3 years, the book turns.
But this is a lot about the world that's not. But this is the best. I've been here a long time, and this is the best pricing environment I've been in. So the math on that's very powerful for us. Yeah, and you about the well, you know, we've got at the you know, we're going to be at 440. We're still going to have a pile of red assets. I mean, we're thinking about continuing. We'll reduce that to zero at some point. Use that to fund future growth. We don't have any, and we may get a question on this, but we don't really have any plans today to go below 440. The idea is to get there, then fund growth by reducing, you know, remix reduce the red assets further. It'll take a couple of years to do that, we think, as we think we want to do that in a way that's smart for us, smart for you in that regard. Trevor and I were talking earlier, do we have a plan to get below 440? We don't, but if we did, all roads would have to lead through 440 to do that. We do a new plan each year, vet it with Jeff, with the board, and so we're flexible around that. Yeah.
How about next, Steve? Steve Tusa?
Thanks. In the fourth quarter, it looks like your losses and impairments are going to be about $1.8 billion. If you just back into the chart given us, that's a little bit up from kind of the quarterly run rate we've seen for the first three quarters. I think it was about $1.6 billion or something like that. With your delinquencies kind of flat to down, and all the credit metrics trending in the right direction, what explains that modest increase in the fourth quarter? Is the first question.
So in the fourth quarter. We'll do another revaluation on the real estate equity portfolio. I think it'll be a little higher than what we saw in the third quarter, mostly coming out of Europe, and that's the small uptick that you see.
Okay. And then for 2012, you're getting another, if you kind of ruler the losses chart, you're getting, looks like, something in the range of $2 billion a tailwind from, provisioning and impairments. What are some of the other just high-level puts and takes as we look at the income statement? Is tax going to be a headwind? You obviously have portfolio margins going for you, volume. Could you just maybe walk through what some of the other, maybe just with pluses and minuses, what some of the other levers are? And then one more question.
So we'll get a lift on margin, what we originated this year and continue to originate next year versus what runs off the book, and what we accomplish on the red portfolio. That'll all be accretive. That will be offset by the fact that we will continue to shrink. So we'll take somewhere between $10 or $15 billion of assets off the books at the same time. So, it'll be hard to see it on the face of it, those dynamics working through, but it will be there. We'll get a little bit of lift, not a ton of lift on credit costs. We will get a bit of a lift on lower impairments next year than versus what we had in 2011. I don't think tax is going to be much of a game changer year to year. We'll have to see how it plays out. I think our tax rate next year will probably be a bit higher than what it is this year. So I don't think there's year over year. I don't think there's a lot of remarkable stuff between the levers, the earnings levers in the business.
Right. And then one more question. You guys, obviously there's careful wording here, but you've said it's in your plan to dividend cash from GE Capital up to the parent. Any more color you can give on that front, how the process is going with your regulator? I know it's, pretty sensitive, but, and any kind of additional color to help us understand what kind of timing, what kind of hoops you have to jump through to get that done over the course of the next year?
Yeah, I'll start with that, and then I'll introduce, I'll introduce now Dave Nason. Dave is the head of regulatory for us, been with us about a year and a half, and is responsible for the $300 million spend that Jeff talked about earlier. In that regard, it's incredibly sensitive, and, all I can tell you, and then I'll let Dave, fill in with that, but, we started with the Fed, back in July of this year. There's a lot of work to be done. We're a little different, from what the average bank is in terms of they're getting to know us, and we're working through a process. They're aware of we've been very public about the dividend, and we'll just have to wait and see, how that plays through. And I don't really have any more color than that, David.
Yeah, I would just say it's easier to say what exactly the process isn't going to look like. As the team has said, it's still in our plan. That's probably the most important thing. Second thing is, Fed's only been here for 5 months, so they're getting up to speed about the business model, learning our governance and our process. And the third is, it's just important to say that the regulatory requirements for companies like ours haven't been written. So we're operating in an environment that's pretty uncertain. What is certain is that we're not part of the bank holding company rules that came out in CCAR. They were very explicit about the fact that those do not apply to us.
Understand your business. What inning are you in as far as how you understand your business and, you know, how you would see an outsider is understanding your business. You know, how far up the curve are they? Obviously, that has to happen before they even make a judgment, but, you know.
It's pretty hard to characterize where they are. I mean, they're 5 months in. We're a pretty unique animal. We're doing our best to get them informed. Hard to characterize.
This is just hard for us to answer. We don't know what we don't know, so.
Great. Terry, you want to go next?
First off, a clarification, the 6.3 to 6.5 billion net income this year, is that at the GECC level or the GECS level?
The GEX level will be modestly different, modestly lower.
Yeah. And can we maybe get a little more color on the alternative funding piece for next year?
Yeah, Kathy.
Sure. So, as you've probably noticed, we did grow our alternative funding in 2011, primarily by growing deposits in both our international banks as well as in our U.S. banks, our FSB and our ILC. So now that we have all of Dan's platforms in the banks that are up and running and operating, new business origination will be going through the banks. And as those assets get added to the balance sheet, we will be launching our direct to retail internet deposit platform. So when we think about alternative funding, it's a focus on deposits. It's a focus on securitization. The markets have been pretty good this year, especially in the credit card area, but not only there, in other products as well. We have done some covered bond issuance. We'll see how the market is as we move forward. We've done Sukuk financing and many other things. So I think it depends upon market conditions. It depends upon what our final ending net investment is and how the businesses grow and where it comes from. But I think the important thing to remember is we have a lot of alternatives that we work on, and we review these every other week at our ALCO. To make sure that we've got solid plans in place so that we can focus on the platforms where the assets are and put an appropriate funding product with it.
Okay, and then just lastly, on the stress test scenario that y'all ran through, you know, why 5%? I've seen some others running them at 7%. And how do you think the April timetable that people talk about on the Fed stress test works into the process of the Fed getting to know you? Do you think that runs in parallel? Do you think that pushes the process out? Any color there would be helpful.
Brian, Dave.
Just with respect to the stress test, what we presented there was sort of the excess to the minimum 5% regulatory under stress. So you can imagine the Basel requirements for capital for the banks would be 7% before the buffers on an ongoing basis. There's a different view of the requirement of minimum capital under stress, and that's the difference between the two. I asked Dave to talk about the timing issue.
On the timing, they're pretty much detached. I mean, the CCAR process sets up a very formulaic process by which those 30 banks would go into the program. They basically apply in January, and they'll get an answer around the March timetable. Ours is a much more customized, unique process. So we're going to continue informing the Fed about our business, continue talking about these plans. But you can't look at the calendar the same way you'd look at the calendar for 30 banks for us.
Great. Next one, we move to the side of the room. Jeff, you want to go?
Thank you. Just to be clear on the notion of the plan, I think Kathy actually gave us kind of the liquidity plan, getting down to kind of $50-60 billion of liquidity. Is there a dividend embedded in that walk where we see that big step down in business cash flows from $45 billion to $10-15 billion?
Jeff, you want to take that?
What we planned for 2012 is an income dividend. Okay, so we're planning on sending to the company a percentage of our earnings next year. That's what the plan is.
And we should assume that's kind of in keeping with historical percentages pre-crisis?
Roughly.
All right.
And we're surprised anybody's curious about that. We didn't anticipate that would come up.
No one caught that $30 billion change in the slide.
The plan is not to dividend $30 billion next year.
Okay. And obviously there's divestiture proceeds and everything in the 11 number. That's part of that delta, correct? Do you have that number? How much was in 11 is from divestitures?
Of which number?
Of the business cash flows, are you including divestiture proceeds in that?
Yeah. We'll get it for you. It's fairly de minimis. Most of the business cash flow numbers are shrinking E&I.
Thank you.
Yeah, a couple billion dollars. But when we do a disposition, the cash that we're getting back is effectively our equity.
Mike, sorry about you, Dean. Do you want to do the next one?
Thank you. It was really interesting to see Jeff Bornstein's slides that show GE Capital versus bank peers, and most importantly on net interest margin. So it begs the question, is there a move afoot to change the reporting structure to make this a ongoing metric?
We did this as an analytic exercise. I'm not sure. We've not crossed the bridge about whether we need to redo our external financial reporting. We wanted to give you kind of a snapshot on what we think the comparables are and how you might think about them. We've not really had the discussion or crossed the bridge around, are we changing our external financial reporting?
What's always interesting is how would GE Capital compare banks, and the comparison obviously is favorable, and it would just eliminate that that question as to, you know, why do you have a different reporting structure, and so from our perspective, it certainly would be favorable.
Great. Thank you.
Shannon, do you want to go next? Right over here in the middle.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, given the where the Tier 1's going and the stress test you laid out with the excess, how did you arrive at $50 billion as the right long-term target for cash, given that's about where you're going to end 12 and it's also pretty elevated?
Mm-hmm. Kathy?
Okay, so the way we've thought about cash as we go forward is I would put it into two separate pieces. First is we look at what our upcoming long-term debt maturities are. So if you look at 2012, we have about $80 billion, and that's because of the TLGP debt that's maturing. As we look beyond 2012 and just focus on what's coming, what maturities are coming in 12, 13, and beyond, it's about $35 billion a year. So that one fact alone, just looking at your debt maturity profile, will allow you to run with a significant amount less in terms of cash that you need to carry, run through all the liquidity stress tests to make sure that you can withstand adverse market environments and so on. So that's sort of one way of getting at it. And I think the other way is to really think about, you know, where the cash is located, and some of it is in our wholly owned banks. And so as we build out our deposit programs, we want to make sure that they've got the liquidity that they need to support the deposits. So when you put both of those models together, I think we come out being comfortable with carrying about $50 billion of cash as we go forward. Now, we'll refine that as we see where the E&I is and what markets and so on, and which legal entities.
I mean, $50 billion versus $35 billion in maturities seems like a lot, no?
Well, it is, but we're going to continue to work through and refine that as I said, as we go forward. We carry about $10 billion of that today in our banks, and so that doesn't really factor into what we can readily use. So if you really think about the operating cash we have, it'll be roughly 40, just as today, you know, we had $88 billion of total liquidity, which was our cash plus our short-term investments that are greater than 90 days. So if you look at that $88 billion, there was roughly 10 in our banks as well. So once you back that out, you get down to the real operating cash that you have that you can use to pay debt and in any of the markets around the world. So it's really kind of a 78 to instead of 50, really looking at about a $40 billion comparison.
Okay. And just a question on the real estate debt lending, sort of restarting that and targeting bringing E&I back up. I mean, I guess the quality of business that you're seeing out there is attractive, but in terms of thinking of what you want GE Capital to look like in a bigger sense, you know, why not either shrink it further or put that capital into CLL, you know, somewhere else? Why sort of start growing the real estate debt book again?
Well, I think the, you know, I'll answer that, and then, if Mark, if you want to add anything to it, you can. But the, you know, our view is the real estate debt book. We've been in the business for a very long time. It's an area I think we have as much core competency about as anything. We let the equity book get big. You know, no argument there. It is running down. Returns are attractive. We think it's very safe today. We do see more opportunity around that market for us. We think it's attractive. We think it's safe. And it's something we've done for over 30 years. So I think in hindsight, to tell you that, you know, the real estate business overall got too big and the equity piece got way too big during that period. We're shrinking that down. And I think as long as we can do these types of conservative loans at north of a 2 return in this market, it's very safe. And that's how I would answer it. So. But we can always make it smaller. But you know, as part of our plan today is we are shrinking the business. It will shrink further. We're not doing a lot of debt, but we are doing smart debt, I think, in terms of what we're seeing. We are profitable in it. You know, our problem in that book is really on the equity side.
Great. Julian?
yeah, thanks. I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, you're entering sort of the fourth year of the E&I sort of shrinkage. After that, you're probably looking to grow it. So I guess if you think about opportunities for growth, you know, from a value side, Europe may appear in the next 12 months. You know, real estate's already getting there, I guess. And from a growth standpoint, obviously non-developed markets, I guess, longer term are a good area to go into. If you think about those three areas, which are you sort of most excited about in terms of deploying capital, you know, weighing up risk and reward? Because I guess the emerging markets, you're less interested in real estate. It's been kind of back and forth. In Europe, it sounds like you're starting to think about it. But what types of activity in Europe would you focus on?
Well, I think I'd have to – it's a very complicated – I mean, it would take a long time to answer that. Let me kind of bucketize it into kind of core business and anything we might see opportunistically. Everything that we have in core is good to go. They are building, growing, adding front end. We are funding that by selling down non-core or red assets in that. So whether it's CLL in Europe, CLL in North America, CLL in Asia, they're good to go. It's a business where the pricing is north of 2. And you saw most of what we do is there today. The debt business, where they have a finite budget of what we're allowing them to do in real estate, but they're good to go too. The Margaret's business that she talked about is good to go. So all of these businesses, the way we've tried to think about it, and I don't want to make it hard, but you know, if you go back to a tough period 3-4 years ago, we decided to, you know, what's the right size for the company? And there was a lot of metrics that went into that, you know, size of earnings, size of funding, different ways. We had a lot of advice. We ended up circling around the number of 440. It's not science. It's just where we seem to work for everybody. We picked a goal, assigned it to the end of 12. And so then we dissected the business. And to get us to that 440, recognizing that we were going to have a good core green business on a going forward basis. So we segregated those two things. So red is all about shrink. Red is all about people being paid to make it smaller. Green is sort of normal business, open for business, much like Dan and Margaret talked about it. Now, in terms of being acquisitive, I'm not sure you really asked it, but just to answer you, that we'd be very selective on that. I think that most of our view around our planning, at least so far, is kind of a core growth plan. You know, we think, and I don't know if we're right about it or not, but we think that there should be attractive opportunities in Europe, and we'll have to see how that plays out. I would say today the pricing that we've seen today has not been compelling to us, so we haven't done anything with it. But there's certainly, and you'd have probably different views in this room, there's certainly probably conversations going on in Europe on the other side of these equations. Well, I think if the price gets right, you know, we would be opportunistic as long as we understood the risk. And and felt that. But we don't have anything big. In fact, I don't think we have anything big, period, in that, but nothing that we're working on you'll read about in the paper in the next few weeks. We talk to people. We have a big BD team, and we'll have to wait and see. And the only reason we talk about Europe is because we think Europe is the most likely place for it.
And just a very quick follow-up. I mean, excluding divestments, you know, what's going on with sort of headcount and kind of core operating costs in the existing kind of go-forwards business? I mean, you're adding some headcount, mm-hmm. you know, you mentioned at the beginning, but in aggregate, you know, how should we think about ongoing costs, headcount, those sorts of things?
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, headcount is a big piece of our costs. I mean, when you think of a business like ours, you know, we have really three levers. I mean, we have people in cubicles. That's the lever, SG&A. We have, and we've reduced that quite a lot to get $4 billion of cost out of the system over the last 3-4 years. You know, I would say that we're still working through that. We want to add some front-end capacity. We think it's a good time to be doing that. I think it's probably a pretty good time for us to gain some share in some of these markets, just doing that organically. We don't have anything very ambitious. Jeff, I don't know how you want to talk about cost.
I would say we're still very diligent about it, and we've had to add quite a bit of costs across the functions and regulatory over the last couple, 3 years. But, you know, we're not planning on a substantive cost expansion 2012 forward. Quite the contrary.
We think we're in a pretty good place now, and the people that we're adding really is around sales and around, and it's not a lot, you know, several hundred, and then around you know, regulatory in that regard. You know, we have contingency plans if things get more difficult, but that's where we are.
Great. Any others? That's it.
Well, good. We really appreciate you coming out.
Okay.
We're going to hang around here for a bit. If you're,
yep.
We're going to have a kind of a hospitality set up. So for those that want to stay or talk to any
Great.
Of us individually, and we appreciate it.
Just two housekeeping items for the people on the webcast. This will be available for replay tomorrow, and then we have our annual outlook meeting with Jeff and company next week in New York City on the 13th. So please join us for cocktails outside. Thank you.